Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. Janice Ian is the singer-songwriter responsible for pivotal 1960s and 70s songs like Society's Child, At 17, and Stars.
Stars, they come and go. They come in fast, they come slow, and they go like the last light of the sun all in a blaze. And all you see is glory. Most have seen it all, live their lives in sad cafes and music halls, and we always have a story. So if you don't lose patience with my fumbling around, I'll come up singing for you.
For the last six decades, Janice Ian has overcome homophobia, record industry misogyny, and a life-threatening illness to produce an indelible body of work. Filmmaker Varda Barkar has captured Janice Ian's story and how it fits into the world of her time in the new documentary, Janice Ian, Breaking Silence.
Come into my solitude, though I weary be. Come into my tenderness, dream along with me. Listen to the whisper sing, listen to the singer shout. Come into my solitude, me and my big mouth.
Janice Ian, Breaking Silence, will screen at Assembly in Kingston, New York this Sunday, September 28th at 7 p.m. The screening will be followed by a moderated audience Q&A with Janice Ian. The moderator, I'm very pleased to say, will be me. With a sort of preview of our dynamic, Janice Ian joins us now. Janice, welcome back to the roundtable.
Thanks, Sarah. Good to be here again. Sort of here, anyway.
Sure. Connecting some way in this weary world.
Yes.
When we last spoke a few years ago, the photography and filming for the documentary Breaking Silence was, you know, they were following you on your farewell tour. And we had discussed that they, you know, you'd been working on it with them because you didn't want there to be a doc specifically about you, but about the times you lived in. And now the doc is done. I watched it last night and think it's marvelous. How do you feel about the finished product of the documentary?
Well, it's weird to see yourself portrayed.
Sure.
It's kind of like watching old home movies of yourself when you were four. And having your whole family say, oh, weren't you cute when you're 60? I feel pretty good about it. I think Varda did an amazing job of interweaving the events that led to a lot of that songwriting while at the same time making me look wonderful. And what artist doesn't want to be made look wonderful? I did ask her to talk to several people who I knew disliked me intensely, and none of them would talk to her, so that part was missing. But otherwise, I love the archival footage she got about the civil rights movement and the women's rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty pleased with it. Mind you, I've seen it twice. It's so weird to see yourself that I've sort of been avoiding it.
Sure, I understand. And I don't think that that's an uncommon reaction. A while ago, you had to stop playing piano because your hand was injured and the stretching that's required to play piano, you know, was no longer workable. In the film, it's revealed that you also have, it's a very emotional part of the documentary where you reveal that you have discovered that you have scarring on your vocal cords and mayn't be able to sing. How is that situation currently, and what would you like to convey about it?
Well, there's nothing really to convey about it. I got a virus, and it caused pretty severe scarring on my right vocal cord. It's better. I no longer sound raspy, but it's still there. I'm at the point now where I can probably carry half a verse of a song or maybe even a whole verse without going off key, but I can't trust my voice after that. So I made the decision, rather than try surgery, which would eventually cause more scarring, or try regular shots of cortisone to my larynx, which you can't tell how long they're going to last, I made the decision to step down. I would rather have stepped down at my best than stay around for people to hear me at my worst. I don't think it's something you come to terms with.
Mm.
It's like losing a limb. You don't come to terms with it. You accept it as reality, but it never becomes normal, especially not when you've been doing the same thing for 60 plus years and you suddenly can't do it anymore.
Right. You'd been singing since you were a tiny, tiny, tiny person. And
very tiny person.
Yes, so young.
Yeah, I have a vivid memory of sitting on Pete Seeger's lap when I was about 2.5 or 3, singing some song with my dad at a Workman's Circle meeting. So I've been a singer all my life. It's a very strange thing to not define myself that way. On the other hand, playing devil's advocate here, I am a songwriter first, and mm-hmm. it's the writing that's always been the most important thing to me. The interesting part to me has been how intertwined being able to sing what I write as I'm writing is.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a real difference now that I notice it from a personal point of view, if you will, between artists who write songs that they can sing and artists who write songs when they can't sing. And then there's people like Fred Kohler, one of my favorite writers, who can't sing his way out of a rain barrel and knows it, and yet he's a brilliant writer. So, yeah, maybe I'm completely wrong about that. It could be.
What is your current writing practice? What are you writing lately? Who do you imagine writing for, if you do?
Well, right now I'm on the road, so I'm not writing at all. I really rarely write on the road. I think I've written 3 songs in my life on the road, Matthew, and then Stranger from the last album, and a 3rd one that I can't remember. This is not a writing time for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I finished The Light at the End of the Line, my last album, I knew that writing songs was not something I was going to be doing a lot. I was going to turn more toward writing novels and writing short stories. So I'm not really doing anything much right now, but getting through this year, which is the 3rd year in a row that cataclysmic things have happened in my life. And then we'll figure it out next year, Sarah.
Speaking of cataclysmic things, you said in your life, and I don't mean to, I'm not going to pry, but...
No, go right ahead. Everybody else does.
No, when you said cataclysmic, I envisioned a kind of, you know, global and national perspective. But then when you said in my life, my focus... you know, narrowed in with
you. Oh, yeah,
you.
There's enough cataclysm going on nationally and globally. I don't need to even think about that.
We've had
3 weird years in a row, my wife and I. We had the 1st year I lost my ability to sing. The 2nd year, 2 hurricanes wiped out almost all of my instruments and stage gear and work area.
Oh, my gosh.
And
I had not
year,
heard about that.
Oh, yeah, pretty exciting.
Devastating.
And still fighting with Wright flood insurance. And then this year, our dog died suddenly.
Oh, no.
And just one thing after another, you know, but things come in 3s. 3 is the magic number. So I'm fairly confident that next year will be stellar.
Good. I'll put, you know, put hope into the universe for that for you as well. You lived through and were very, you know, involved in, immersed in the activism and change of the 60s and 70s. And it was a, you know, legendarily tumultuous time in the United States.
Not anymore. We beat the crap out of that time. Yeah.
How do you process it? What do you think? What advice do you have, if any? What should we be doing, Janice?
About the state of the world today?
Yeah,
you're asking a songwriter?
I always am asking a songwriter. It's maybe not fair, but yes.
I think we have to keep in mind that it's a war of attrition, and it is a war. And the goal is to make people feel hopeless and to make people tired. And they're certainly doing a good job of that. But there are still people like myself standing up. Baez is standing up. Stephen Colbert certainly is standing up. Whoopi Goldberg is standing up. I think a lot of us are standing up, and I think that Cadet Bonesburg's popularity in his own mind and in the minds of the people who kowtow to him is vastly overestimated. I think if they don't back down a bit, the country is headed for a real mess and a violent revolution, which is unfortunate because it's completely unnecessary. I will admit that I am extremely disappointed in the Supreme Court. But then again, when you can buy and sell people that easily, I suppose it shouldn't be any surprise.
As you are traveling this year and touring with the film and doing conversations with fans of yours who've been fans of yours for decades and decades now, how has that experience been? What is it like traveling with the movie?
One of the things I've discovered in my life is that artists like myself, I think most artists, are always in search of a mythical home, a place where, unlike the way most of us grew up, regardless of how great our parents were, we never quite felt at home. And for me, the theater has always felt like home. The minute I hit backstage, I relax, my breathing slows, my blood pressure goes down, and I know where I am. So one of the great losses in not being able to tour anymore as a singer was never going back to theaters that I loved. And this time I'm getting to go back. We've spent the year going back to places that we intended to play with me singing, except that this time we're showing a movie, places like the Kate in Connecticut or Cafe Lena. It's a wonderful feeling to be able to finish that connection. And then in terms of the fans, I started staying after the shows again to meet people and to sign things and say hello, because I got so many emails from people who meant to say thank you or no thank you at the end of a concert and were saying they now didn't have the opportunity. So I thought on this last leg we would give them the opportunity. And that's worked out really well, I think, for me and for them.
In the blink of night, all that's left is the past, and the memories fade till there's silence at last. But the song will remember, the spark will still shine. It's the light at the end of the line. There's a light at the end of the line.
The film screening and conversation with Janice Ian of Janice Ian Breaking Silence on Sunday, September 28th at 7 p.m. at Assembly in Kingston. I will be there to stand to the side and gently moderate a Q&A. Because Janice,
yeah, that'll be fun. The Q&As have gotten interesting. One at the Kate went on for, gosh, over an hour. People were really asking great questions.
I'm very excited. I feel very fortunate to get to participate in an event with you, and I thank you for your time this morning.
Absolutely, Sarah. Thank you so much for the good questions, as always.
Janice Ian Breaking Silence, directed by Varda Barkar, will screen at Assembly in Kingston, New York this Sunday, September 28th at 7 p.m. To learn more, visit assemblykingston.com or janiceiandocumentary.com. Those links will be posted along with this conversation at wamc.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable.